my father worked in the Broadwater Press, which was where Castron's originated.
Right.
It's like a unit within the Broadwater Press making the blocks for the printing presses.
So it was a separate company?
Well, it was like an integral company of right. Broadwater Press.
And his only customer was Broadwater Press then?
Yes, I would say so, yes. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I didn't understand the customer base at that time. And when I joined them in 1956 as a trainee, if you like, and then I became an apprentice for 5 years after. Kestrons eventually became a buyout by my father and two other directors, and so they bought the company from Broadwater Press and moved to Mill Green Camp, which is down where the golf course is now.
The new golf course.
That's where Mill Green Camp used to be. There were several companies there. There were engineering companies, mechanical companies, all sorts. Kestrons was a block making company, letterpress block making company.
Right.
Which they made the metal plates from copper or zinc, depending on which type of product was being used. For line drawings, it was on zinc.
Mm-hmm.
For photographic items, it was on copper. The photographic, they called it half tone because each photograph is made up of a series of dots. The closer the dots are together, the darker the image. The finer the dots, the lighter the image. So the sky was just a pinpoint of dots.
Right.
That's how you created the...
Was that the forerunner for things called pixels and things
yes,
like that?
Yes, yes. Well, this was before lithographic printing and before electronic printing, in fact. This was the old method of wet ink on dry paper,
gosh.
So to speak. In Kestrons, I was supposed to be a camera operator, although I was given every job to do within the company.
During your apprenticeship?
During my apprenticeship, but when it came to my fourth year, I was getting concerned because I would have to move on to another company, and because of the restrictions within the trade union, I would only be able to take a job as a camera operator. And because I'd served every department, so to speak, but not camera operating in full time, I was a bit worried about how I would fare out in the open world, so to speak. So I took my message to the trade union and reported that I'm in my fourth year, I haven't really been trained as a camera operator, can anything be done about it?
Mm.
And it caused all sorts of problems, but it highlighted the problem that I had, you know, because the trade union had a white card system, whereas you received from the, if you applied for a job as a camera operator, you had the white card to go there for just the camera operator's job. You couldn't do anything else within the company. It was that sort
yes.
of close shop.
Very restrictive.
Yeah. And only one man could apply for that job at any given time. So there's only one card for that job.
Oh.
So when you go for the job, if they liked you, took you on. If they didn't, hopefully there might be somebody else waiting for the white card to come in. Very restrictive.
Very indeed, wasn't it? Goodness. So did that improve your training during your apprenticeship?
It did in the end, but I've always been... a jack of all trades and probably master of none for a long time. Yeah, and eventually I, during the time that I'd gone to the one we moved into Brownfields, we had custom dark rooms made to measure, all the things you needed to do.
How old were you?
16.
Gosh. And can you remember what your starting wage was?
Yes, I can, quite clearly. Because I had a stepmother, and my first wage was £3.76
a week.
A week.
Gosh.
And I went home with my wage packet, proud as punch, and I had my wage packet and said, "How much do you want, Mum?" And she took the packet off me and gave me 7 and 6.
Oh!
Yeah, I think once you completed your apprenticeship, you were expected to move on. The actual company was divided into 6 departments, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
You were either a camera operator, a printer on metal, a line etcher, a half-tone etcher, a router and mounter, or a proofer.
Right.
That was the set demarcations, yes, within the union.
Right.
I mean, in a small firm like Kestron's, you're expected to cover for people when they go on holidays. You're expected to do more than one job.
I mean, yes.
Which I preferred anyway,
for your experience.
But when because I was more used as a finisher or proofer, so I was doing more routing, beveling, wood sawing, proofing, anything but the camera operating job, which I was definitely a 40-hour week. 40-hour week, yeah. Which eventually went down to 35 within the union. I mean, union.
So starting at 8 o'clock, something like that.
Yes, yeah. Well, there would be at least, I would think about 10 or 12, including the office staff and representatives, yeah.
Yeah.
Ending up to 12 people over there.
So there was quite a sales, there was a sales element in that.
Yes. Well, you had your rep that went out to new customers to town for work, deliver work, then you had a delivery driver. Usually had 2 people in the office, which would have been a bookkeeper and a secretary. And then the other directors, the 2 remaining directors, would have been top in their field, in particular line etching or half tone etching or camera work. Yeah.
Oh.
So my governor, in fact, was a camera operator. So what the printing works to get to the Kestrons, which was to the rear of the building. We didn't have our own entrance, so so you walk by with all the girls in packing, and they all whistle at you. So
yes,
he was a manager within of Broadwater Press of Kestrons within Broadwater
Press.
There was a man in the office, can't think of his name now, but he was sort of in overall charge, but my father looked after the production, if you like, the production line.
Mm.
Although he was a line etcher at the time, where you could go and get a cup of tea and flow there, and the canteen always made sandwiches and bought your sandwiches for her.
Yes.
And she always had a cigarette hanging from her lip, you know. Source of the customer base, I should say, was other printers in other towns. I mean, we had customers up in Letchworth, Hitchin, and then South Hatfield and what have you. All over the place, really.
We're now discussing Tony's various jobs.
Right. I'll start with the camera operator's job, and this is done by photographic means, by offering a image onto a copy board in front of the camera, and then the image is reduced or enlarged in size on the camera, on the focusing screen on the back of the camera. And once you've set the image, you take the screen off the back, and you load like a film holder, if you like, in the dark room under red light, because the red light doesn't affect the film, doesn't expose the film. That's why you can see what you're handling under red light.
Right.
That adheres to the back of a glass plate within the holder. You pull the shutter down, take it out to the camera, put it on the back, pull the shutter up, and it leaves the lens and the film to expose, once you take the cap off the film, the image which is on the copy holder. So once that's exposed, you then, obviously it's all timed and set to a certain aperture, you take it back into the dark room and would unload the film, put it in a dish and develop it in a dish till the image comes up, fix it, and hang it out to dry. And that negative is then laid onto an image, a light-sensitive plate, either copper or zinc, in this case zinc, and the light is then put under vacuum in a frame, exposed to a carbon arc. The image is hardened where the light shines through the metal, like the image itself.
Mm-hmm.
After you take it off, you put it under the tap, and everything that hasn't been hardened washes away. You then, in fact, harden it over a gas stove.
Yes.
And then the image is hardened, and then it can be offered to the acid to etch the depth within the plate itself. With the halftone, that's the photographic images, you've got a squared up image, either portrait or landscape, cut to a certain size. But that's made up of a series of small dots.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger the dots, the darker the part of the image. And that's what forms the grey and light tones, and that's why it's called half tone.
Oh, right.
Because there are a series of dots which helps understand the process of the image. The line etcher etches into zinc, and they are basically line drawings. It's either text or sketches, pencil sketches sometimes, or hard line drawings, in other words. But the copper etcher, he etches all the halftone work, and they're done on copper. They're very fine dots which are etched very skillfully into the depth of the plate until they can print from the surface. And sometimes they etch 133 dots per inch. That's the scale of, depending which screen they use to produce the image. But that's done through, I think it was iron peroxide, I think it was used for the copper, and nitric acid was used for the zinc.
They're quite fearful substances.
Yeah. And then when you came to the finishing part, you obviously had areas which you didn't want to etch and waste acid etching unnecessary areas. So these were routed out, which took away the surface that wouldn't print, in other words.
Yes.
And what they used to do was, if they had great big vast areas of white, they used to shellac the areas that they didn't want to etch.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would be cut out on a router machine, hand router, and then the scrap would be used. When the final plates are made, they're laid onto a flatbed in a press. They're inked over with a roller.
Mm-hmm.
Then paper's offered on top of the image, and you're pulling that handle down, and it impresses the paper to the surface of the metal. You peel it off, and there's your image on paper.
Fantastic.
I mean, before, this would be laying in a flatbed with text, all the fonts and the type around it. And it would be passing backwards and forwards underneath the rollers at the same time to get the ink on one purpose, and then the paper on the second pass.